First of all, let me give you a little background. I'm going to be talking about fear as a barrier to mammography. And to start with, I'll talk a little bit about breast cancer. And as you can see from this slide, breast cancer remains the number one cancer that women get. And it's pretty far out there. I know breast cancer seems to be overdone. I've heard that pretty much in the last year or two, that we're overdoing breast cancer. But it is still the number one cancer that women get by far. And it also is the number two cancer that kills women. Lung cancer and lung and bronchus has surpassed it. You can see where it made the passing there in the 80s, but it still is the number two killer of women for cancer. And we've had a lot of information about mammography in this. I've heard a lot because I guess I go to those particular sessions, but there's been a lot of information about whether mammography helps or hurts, the pros and cons to it, but it still remains the single most effective method to detect breast cancer early. It just is what you can do to find the breast cancer early. And in women age 50 to 69, regular screening can reduce their breast cancer mortality by 20 to 35%. In women 40 to 49, despite anything that has come out, the reduction is still 20% in mortality for women age 40 to 49. And that is especially true in certain vulnerable groups of women. The other thing that mammography can help with is that it can lead to a greater range of treatment options. Because you catch the cancer so much earlier, your treatment options are different, and you can have less aggressive surgeries and therapies, so it leads to a better treatment path and for women who've had who have breast cancer. So the American Cancer Society still in 2010 recommends yearly mammograms for women starting at the age of 40. This is still the latest recommendation by the American Cancer Society. And below that, I'm telling you what they recommend for clinical breast exams beginning in the 20s and 30s and how they should have that. But I really want to highlight that yearly mammograms are still recommended starting at the age of 40 right now. So how are we doing with mammograms? Since we know that they help, we know that they can reduce breast cancer mortality, how are we doing? For women age 40 and older, about 62% of women are having, and this is in the general population, about 62% of women are having their mammograms. And the target for healthy people 2010 was 70%. So we have not reached our target. And there are certain barriers that make you much less likely to have a mammogram. And those structural or kind of systematic barriers are education and health insurance. Women with no health insurance, we hope that the healthcare reform will fix some of this, but right now, only about 36% of those women are having mammograms done on a yearly basis. And with less than a high school education, only about half of those women are having their mammograms on a yearly basis. So those are kind of the structural or systematic barriers to mammograms that we find most commonly. And what we find most commonly in terms of psychosocial barriers are things like knowledge about mammograms, fatalistic beliefs, and the thing that I concentrate most on is fear. The reason I concentrate most on that is because that's what you hear about from the women the most as a psychosocial barrier. So the purpose of this study that I did, it's a secondary analysis. The bigger study was to examine the barriers and benefits that influenced the use of screening mammography among African American women. And the reason I'm doing that is to inform the development of this intervention that I am developing. But for the purposes of today, I'm going to look at predictors of fear as a barrier to mammography for all women who are visiting the emergency department for non-urgent care. And I'm going to tell you in a second why I'm talking about the emergency department. So like I said, this is a secondary analysis. There's a larger study going on that's part of my career development award. And this is a secondary analysis of some of the phase one data from that study. It's a cross-sectional study. I used some mixed methods. And it was conducted in the University of Kentucky Emergency Department. So the reason I used the emergency department for this study is it's probably pretty evident that people, or especially women, who are sitting in the emergency department, number one, they have lots of time. They're in there for 3 to 6 hours. If you're in there for non-urgent care, you have got plenty of time to talk to me. So it's they're a captive audience. They're waiting. They're waiting with someone, or they're waiting for an earache or a headache. Now, if a headache, they may not want to talk to me, but lots of times they're in there for 3 to 6 hours, and I can talk to them. And if they're in there for non-urgent care, we can assume that they usually don't have a regular source of care, which places them in that group that has the lower mammography rate, and they may be using the emergency department as their sole source of medical care. And we know from everything we've ever heard that the main reason women get mammograms is because someone tells them to. You go to the doctor, the physician, the nurse practitioner, whoever you see tells you, you need to get a mammogram, they schedule it for you and you go get it done. So we can assume that some of these women are not being told to have their mammograms. So this is why this research occurs, or this study occurred, in the emergency department. So the inclusion criteria was they had to be English speaking, they had to be 40 years of age or greater, and they had to have visited the ED for non-urgent care in the past 6 months. Some of the women were captured while they were there. Some of them were not there at the time. It was a kind of a snowball technique, but they had to have been there in the last 6 months for non-urgent care. And for those women, we asked them a range of questions, a bunch of demographic questions. The thing I'm going to concentrate today the most on is the barriers to mammography. We use Champions Barriers and Benefits Checklist, and as part of that, there's 11 items that assess your barriers to mammography, and that assess things like fear, your knowledge, embarrassment, time, different things that the literature has identified as being the primary barriers to mammography. The Crumbax alpha for this sample was 0.89. And we also use the semi-structured interview guide. Like I said, it's a mixed method study, but today I'm just going to concentrate on what we found in the quantitative part of the study. The qualitative part of the study led me to look at fear, because almost every woman talked about fear in her interview, and it also came out in the quantitative side of the study. So for our data analysis, we did descriptive statistics, frequencies, and to look at the barriers, and then we did a logistic regression model to determine what were the predictors of having fear, what predicted being afraid as being your barrier. And we included demographic and personal characteristics, as well as having had a mammogram in the past year. We wanted to see what the woman who is afraid looks like, what predicts being afraid of having a mammogram. So for the sample for this study, we had 90 women. They were mostly white women, 55% of them. Most of them were not married, 56%. They had an annual income below $30,000. Most of them had health insurance. Even though they were sitting in the emergency department for non-urgent care, 88% of them said they had health insurance, which surprised all of us, but what can you do? This is what we found consistently across the board, is women or people sitting in the emergency room for non-urgent care do have health insurance. Most of them said they had primary care providers. That, another surprise, as my assumptions were incorrect. You are all nodding, yeah, that's probably true. We were all wrong. They all had insurance, and they all said they had primary care providers. What we found out when we tweaked our questions was what they sometimes call primary care providers are specialists. They don't necessarily have someone who would recommend a mammogram, but they do see a doctor because they have a lot of comorbidities. So if you're going to see, maybe you're having dialysis, the dialysis person is not going to suggest you have a mammogram. Unfortunately, those women say, I have a primary care provider because they're on dialysis 3 times a week, but they don't actually have someone who would say you need to have a mammogram done. So that's kind of misleading when we say 85% of them actually have a primary care provider. The average age of the women was 54.8 years. So had they had their mammograms, 56% of them said they had had their mammograms, and 44% of them did not. About 18% of them had never had a mammogram or couldn't remember when. When they said they couldn't remember, that means they never had one. Because who could have a mammogram and not remember? We all remember if we've had one. So just for comparison, that how that compares is about 62%, like I told you, of women in the general population have had mammograms. So this is a population that's had their mammograms at an even less level, as you would expect, than the general population. And as I said, the target we're going for is about 70%, and we're not even close to that. So I was very interested in people saying they had medical insurance because they were sitting in the emergency department for non-urgent care. So we did ask them what kind of medical insurance. Most of them didn't say what kind of medical insurance they had, but of those who did, this is how the breakout is. Most of them had private medical insurance of the ones who did tell us what kind they had. And then there was Medicaid and Medicare. So here's what they told us was were the reasons that they weren't getting mammograms. And the primary reason was fear. Finding out something is wrong. I'm calling that a fear barrier. Cost, as you would expect, if they have some kind of copay or they're not insured. Pain, exposure to radiation, and afraid of what happens during a mammogram. As you can see, even though those questions don't say fear, most of them relate to fear. I'm afraid of the pain. I'm afraid I'll be exposed to too much radiation. I'm afraid of what happens during it, and I'm afraid of finding out something is wrong. So almost all of these have something to do with fear, even though fear is not in the question specifically. So in our logistic regression of fear as a barrier, here's where the results we're really looking for are. So what predicts you being afraid? What do you look like if you're afraid? So we put all of our variables into the model, and the only thing that predicted being afraid was age and income. It didn't matter what your race was, which was interesting because I concentrate on African American women, and I somewhat expected African American women to have more fear. But race did not predict fear. Marital status did not predict fear. Education didn't predict fear. Health insurance, having a doctor, having had a mammogram, which is another interesting finding. Whether you're having a mammogram or not does not predict your fear. So you'd think that the women who weren't having the mammograms would be more afraid, but the women who are having them are just as afraid as the women who are not having them. So, and we found that qualitatively as well, that fear crosses all of those things. And it's either a paralyzer or it's a motivator. It either motivates women to go get a mammogram or it paralyzes them, like if you're going to get on a roller coaster and you just get to this top and you go, oh my God, I'm too scared. I'm not going to get on. And then other people like that fear a little bit. And they love to go down that roller coaster. It either makes you get on or it makes you not get on. So the only thing we found that predicted having the fear is age. And for every 10 years increase in age, a woman would be 84% less likely to list fear as a barrier. The younger you are, the more afraid you are. For every 10 years, you're 84% less likely. That's pretty significant. And with income, as you would expect, the more money you have, the less afraid you are. That one was pretty expected. So what do we have now? We have that we know that the emergency department is a place where women are not being mammogrammed according to ACS guidelines. They're not getting mammograms as much as they should. We know that fear is a primary barrier to mammography for these women. The fear of finding out something is wrong, the fear of the procedure, the pain, the radiation, what's going to go on during the procedure, and the fear of experiencing pain. I put that again because that is a huge thing that comes out is the pain. And we also know that younger, poorer women experience fear that prohibits them from getting their mammograms. So what do we do about it? Well, I keep doing this study and try to intervene. But the future studies, we know they should focus on not just the concrete things that we like to focus on, like the access to care, which is very crucially important, but that we shouldn't just focus on those concrete barriers to mammography, but we also want to further explore the psychosocial barriers to mammography. Because even if we put every system in place, if someone is afraid to go, that it doesn't matter how much access they have, they're not going to go. So we need to also, at the same time we're giving access to care, we need to be exploring their psychosocial barriers, like this fear. and public health practitioners should be aware of which women are most likely to have this fear barrier. If we are taking care of women, we should know that younger, poorer women are more likely to be afraid and explore this fear with them further when we are caring for those women. Oh, that I should have left that slide up. Yes, we analyzed each question separately as well as a group. And so those were the predictors of having either of those fear questions be, that was the predictor of any of the fear questions. Yeah, we did analyze them separately.
Were there different predictors?
No, no. There was, you know, those, I am not the statistician, but I am certain that if she were here, she would say that I'm correct about that.
Were you the medical home for these children, or were you, every now and then?
The high school model is more of an urgent care. Maggie and Ellen can speak a little bit more to that. It's more of an urgent care setting for those high school students. At the elementary school setting, one of the partnerships is that the nurse practitioner was identified as the primary care home. However, the relationship with the FQHC was three blocks away. So after school hours, they would go to the primary care provider that was at the FQHC, but predominantly most of the kids that were seen for primary care in that school setting, with about 1,000 children, serving about 450 of those kids for that clinic.
So during school breaks, then they would go to
to
the other center.
Correct. The new model, the last of the three, the new model will be open during all holidays and off school time to the two clinics that are partnering and serving on that school campus. So it will be available for the families, for the kids of that school and the siblings of that school to go to during those times. And the hours were extended from 9 to 5. So then they would go to an urgent care setting. I'm working with the urgent care setting about talking to them about being on school campus after that. So.
Any more questions about that?
I have ridiculous amount of questions. But I enjoy all of them. Not ridiculous, but I was curious, in the second presentation you talked about assessing the productivity. Did you do any evaluation of the quality of the time spent, or exactly what the nurses were doing within the time?
I think she left.
Yeah. I think you're addressing it to me, though.
Anne Walker had to leave, but her cards are up on the table, so if you take a card.
But was that
the
way to
do it?
That's the third.
That was the Atlantic City.
Was it with the
FDA? No. It was the, she was talking about the
okay. Any additional questions?
Yes.
So with the Nurse Sound Partnership, did you find that the outreach was making the caseloads fill more effectively or not? Ruth said she wasn't clear and she had to go, so she wanted to ask.
Right. We couldn't correlate what we found out about the outreach activities from the qualitative focus groups to the productivity of the team. So no, we couldn't correlate that because it was just, there was no way to correlate what they were doing qualitatively, because they were asked, were you here for the presentation, for part of it? We were asking the teams, the sites themselves, the nurse home visitors and the supervisors about their strengths and challenges with outreach. So that we could not correlate that with whether they were productive or not.
I see, so that'd be another phase of something.
Right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Can I say this, though? I wasn't supposed to say this, but I ran the numbers over the weekend on the way here just to see, because we've begun to implement some of the recommendations since we ended this inquiry last December. And we had seven of the teams that were meeting expectations during that study, and now we have 12. So I think some of the things that we are doing and discussing with the teams, it's not a hard sell. It's communication with these teams on a daily basis, on to help them to understand the necessity for efficiency and productivity. And sometimes it just, like I said, is sitting down and saying, look, you only have really one nurse who's not productive, and it's making the entire team look like that. And so what can we do to help this nurse? Not to point fingers, not to evaluate her poorly on her performance, but what can we do? What's going on with this particular nurse? So again, it's just like NFP is, and everything we do, it's relationship based. And that's how we're making the improvements. And I think just being very, very clear on the expectations about what we want with productivity. And that has been, again, a long-term conversation. It's not going to be a quick fix, but I have to say everything's going in the right direction. So, and all my fiscal stakeholders are very, very happy with that. You can imagine.